Well, good morning, everybody, and welcome to our council briefing session for this morning. We'll begin with our invocation, and it's a pleasure to introduce to you Pastor Christian Conister with the Southwest Harvest Church, who will perform this morning's invocation. Pastor's been in vocational ministry for over 10 years in the South Dallas area as a youth minister, a Bible school teacher, and associate senior pastor. He attended Southwestern Assemblies of God University and was ordained through the Church on the Rock International. Pastor Conister currently serves as the associate pastor for Southwest Harvest Church and teaches at Christ for the Nations Institute in Dallas and is a co-director of Project Duncanville, a community care organization offering care to South Dallas residents. It is his desire to lead his church and his community in full devotion to Jesus Christ and is determined to cross racial, socioeconomic, and denominational barriers to accomplish this task. Thank you, Pastor, for being with us. Please rise for the invocation.
Thank you very much. I appreciate all of you for allowing this time in the meeting this morning to seek the Lord. I believe that for doing it, this city will be stronger than cities who choose not to. Please bow your head as I pray. Father, we humbly approach you today on behalf of the city of Dallas and her leaders. Please give us your favor today as those involved deliberate on important issues facing this community. You said in your word that if any man lacks wisdom, let him ask, and you would grant it so. Today we ask for your wisdom. Give each member of this council a sharp mind as decisions are made and an open heart to one another and the people of Dallas. Guide us and direct us to follow your example of love, sacrifice, grace, and justice so that we might please you and lead this world one step closer to unity and peace until your coming. And Lord, I also pray a special grace and blessing on those attending the funeral today. God, that all of the friends and family members would find comfort from you for our former city manager. And Lord, we pray this today in your holy name, Jesus. Amen.
Amen. Thank you. Ms. Kinney, would you like to do the pledge for us?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Pastor. Well, again, good morning, everyone. We are privileged in our city to have some terrific people that as we come together on these Wednesdays, we get a chance to recognize. I will tell you this morning, our first one is a special honor and a privilege for me. In our society, sometimes we use the words of servant and hero, and we overuse those. I will tell you, I'm going to use those words this morning, and in this case, they are an understatement of the gentleman that we want to recognize. General, could I ask you to come up here and join me with your daughter, please? It is a pleasure. Let me introduce Major General Richard Mulberry, Jr. As I said, this is a gentleman that has served his country, and the liberties and the freedoms that we enjoy today are because of your generation, people like you, and you specifically, who made the sacrifices for future generations. In addition to that, you have served, since you have come back to Dallas, you have served your community and you have made Dallas and all of North Texas a much better place. As I said, I have the privilege of recognizing Major General Richard Mulberry, Jr. with a special recognition. This recognition is an honor of his lifelong service to both his country and to the city of Dallas. Let me give you a little bit of background and give you a sense of why I've made these preliminary comments. Major General Richard Mulberry has lived in the city of Dallas since 1948. He has served the military and his country. 1949? I missed it by a year. Has served his country for the past 69 years. And I can tell you, those 69 years came with dedication, with valor, and with zeal. General Mulberry was first called to active duty in World War II, and flew over 150 anti-submarine missions and 50 bombing and strafing missions. In 1951, General Mulberry was recalled to active duty during the Korean conflict. Upon his return, the general was promoted to colonel in 1953, Brigadier General in 1969 and Major General in 1971 in the United States Marine Corps Reserve. He was appointed as Inspector General of the Department of Interior by President Ronald Reagan, and his decorations include the Distinguished Flying Cross with 2 stars, the Air Medal with 11 gold and silver stars, the Korean Combat Medal, and the Presidential Unit Citation. He has also committed his time and energy to many civic, veteran, and military organizations here in Dallas. Some of those include the past president of the Dallas Navy League, past commander of the Dallas chapter of the Military Orders of the World Wars, past commander of the American Legion Post 581. He served as the Veterans Day Parade Committee for many, many years. It's always been a pleasure to work with you on that. He also serves as a volunteer at the Frontiers of Flight Museum at Dallas Love Field. To that end, please know it's my honor to present this special recognition on behalf of not only this Dallas City Council, but I can tell you to the 1.3 million residents of the city of Dallas and to every citizen of our country. Major General Richard Mulberry, for his many years of selfless, patriotic, and devoted service and outstanding leadership to the United States of America and responsible, caring, and generous service to the community as a tireless volunteer and outstanding citizen of this country and of the city of Dallas, Texas. General, this is a special recognition. It is a small memento and hopefully a small recognition of all that you've done for our country, for all that you've done for our community. I can tell you all of us understand that our country is better for the sacrifices that your generation made, for what you did in a very difficult time in 2 major conflicts, and also to come back with all of that service, all of that sacrifice you put in, and continue to serve your community in so many different ways, and also continue to serve the men and women that are still at harm's way throughout the world that continue to serve us. So, General, I won't read all of these the elements of this, but please know it identifies your service that you've contributed to our country, as I've outlined. It identifies the service that you have contributed to our community and recognizes everything that you've done. Again, please accept this. It is a great honor for me on behalf of this City Council to recognize you and to say thank you for everything that you've done. General.
Thank you so much, Mr. Mayor. I must tell you that I didn't do all of that without a lot of help, particularly from friends, family, fellow warriors. A family are here, 2 daughters, Lynn Stroud and Gail Abernathy. There's some others here someplace. I wish Jane could be here. But the oxygen tube would not stretch from home to City Hall. I wish it would. I know she's thinking about you all, and she's an absolute gem. We've been married 65 years, and she's as great now as she was 65 years ago. Thank you.
Why don't we get up here? And why don't I ask the entire council if you'd come to join us for pictures?
Why don't we go right out here and put you in General Weston here, and we'll just, if you will we'll get a daughter on your side, and we don't know where it's, we'll surround you that way.
There you go.
Thank you very much. right, here we go. More, please.
Morning, colleagues. This morning, I'm also giving a special recognition. My recognition is to the Dallas Consiglio Parents Education Program. And we gave the certificates to the graduating parents last year, my husband and I. And I was so impressed with the program that Consiglio has started. You know, everybody thinks that there's nobody doing anything to involve the parents in the city, and we talk about it. But there really is a good program that does that. And the Dallas Consiglio has been in Dallas for many, many years. So I want to bring up Florencia Velasco Fortner, who is the executive director at the Dallas Consiglio. And she also has some friends or parents with her. Once again, these folks work every day with the parents of our children that are in Dallas public school system, not only to give them information, but to involve them in what their kids are doing in school, what the report cards mean. They're working primarily with non-English speaking parents, but you know, a lot of our parents don't even know what the report cards mean anymore. And if you've seen one lately, you know, I would probably need some help too. So they do a lot of work, again, with involving parents in the schools and helping them understand, you know, how to help their children become more successful in school. So let me read this to you, Florencia. The Dallas Consiglio is a nonprofit organization that has served the greater Dallas area since 1981, whose mission is to advocate and enhance the quality of life for Hispanics through community partnership. The Consiglio's education program, created in 2002, to address the high dropout rate of Hispanics, helps families understand the importance of education by teaching parents their role, rights, and responsibilities as they relate to their children's academic success. The Parents Advocating for Student Excellence education program teaches parents how to take a participatory role in assisting their children to remain in school, improve their performance in class, graduate from high school, attend college, and earn a degree. In 2005, Consiglio was selected by the United Way of Metropolitan Dallas for the pilot year of its Destination Graduation Initiative, and they have continued to provide programs to support the parent involvement component of the initiative for the last four school years. Therefore, Tom Leppert, the mayor, and the City of Dallas City Council, do hereby give a special recognition to the Dallas Consiglio for enhancing the quality of life of children and parents in our community.
Thank you. Thank you very much. We live in a great city, the city of Dallas, but our greatness is at danger because of the high dropout rates that we have in our city, especially among Hispanics. And one of the things that the Consiglio does is try to work with parents to address the issue not only of high school dropout rates, but of college completion. In a recent study that we had, we found out that students whose parents graduated from our program graduated high school at a 90.2% high school graduation rate, which is phenomenal. And one of the things that the Dallas Consiglio wants to do is to help every single child graduate from high school. And even though we focus on Hispanics, this year 50% of our clients were African American. And we're very proud, and thank you very much for the city for supporting our program. And we're going to continue to work very hard to continue to make the city great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hossa. Ms. Davis, please.
I would like to have St. Philip come in. Come on up. Yeah, this is a special day. Oh, Miss Carroll, we got one. He's real sharp.
Yeah.
I love it. It's the instructor here. Michelle, come on up. You come on. Okay. Okay, who is that student? What's your name, sweetheart?
Zachary Thompson.
Okay, Zachary. Okay, it is so nice of you being here. This is a special day for my district. This certificate of appreciation is presented to St. Philip Episcopal School on the 5th day of May of 2010. On behalf of the City of Dallas, District 7, I want to personally thank you for your support in promoting the 2010 census. You guys did a really good job. And Yasmin, is Yasmin here? Yasmin, come on out. Kind of tell us what they did to receive this award. And then I'm going to let you say something.
Good morning. We invited the St. Philip School teachers to our Camp Census workshop, and they told us a little bit about what their students were doing. Some of them wrote poems, some of them wrote songs, and some of them just wanted to let the community know how important the census was. And so I think Zachary's going to tell us a little bit about that.
Okay, Zachary.
Good morning. I'm Zachary, a fourth grader at St. Philip School and Community Center, and I'm speaking on behalf of my social studies teacher, Ms. Johnson. At St. Philip's, a part of our creed is you must start today to pave the way. We are taught civics through private and public responsibility. Last year, the middle school registered 115 people to vote. This year, the middle school created individual class public service announcements in the form of poems, raps, songs, gifts, and even a game show. Each class took turns presenting during Friday chapel over the course of 6 weeks. In our technology class, we were also able to convert our knowledge into 30-second commercials called Animotos. Mrs. Johnson says they were all great, but that fourth grade really went above and beyond with the assignment. Thank you, and have a great day. Right. Now... Now, please welcome my classmate, Alex Stampley.
Now you say you live here with your wife and children too. Well, you can fill out the census. Fill out the census. I've got a census form for you. I've got a census form for you. Now you say you're married. That birth statement will do. Now there's a form in your mailbox. A form in your mailbox.
I've got a census form for you. I've got a census form for you.
Now, isn't that great? That's worth giving them this certificate. I am so proud of you guys. You guys did a wonderful job, and thank you for all your hard work, and keep up the good work, okay? Who do I give this to? Zachary? All right, let's go. We're going to take us a picture. Thank you so much.
Okay, we're going to take a picture, guys. It's in your mailbox.
You turn on them red sweaters.
Jody, can I talk you into coming up here with me? You know, I think all of us know how important a role water plays in our daily lives, but my guess is that very few people, Jody, it's at the top of their mind. So we're going to see if we can change that a little bit. With keeping in mind Drinking Water Week, that was created and has been celebrated by the American Water Works Association and its members for over 30 years. And here at home, the Dallas Water Utilities has been holding contests for school children during Drinking Water Week since 1984. That was just when we were in elementary school, right, Jody? That's right. The children who entered the contest 26 years ago now have children of their own, and this new generation is also learning the importance of water, and especially saving water. This year's theme was Conservation Action. You can't go green without being blue. The grand prize winning poster has been reproduced and distributed to participating schools in celebration of Drinking Water Week. And a copy of the winning poster and t-shirt has also been provided to each council member. Mr. Allen, can you come up here and help me hold that up there?
Absolutely.
That's what we've got right there. And we all know that children can make a difference. And they are very receptive to this water conservation message. And they also don't have years to overcome. They have a positive influence on their families as well. So they're in a great position to lead the cause for conserving water. So today we want to present this proclamation in honor of the 26th annual Drinking Water Week poster contest. Jody, do we do something to them, or should we just... Come on over here, guys. Come on over here.
We can bring them over here?
Yeah, bring them on over here. Come on over here, guys. So we're going to present this proclamation. And Jody, you want to add a couple words, don't you?
Yes, I do.
Okay, you're up.
Before you today, you see a number of our contest winners. Just to give you a brief concept, we have three different contests we host. One is a poster contest for grades 1 through 5, a t-shirt contest, which Mr. Allen aptly showed, for grades 6 through 8, and then an essay contest for junior and senior high school age students. This contest is open to all Dallas students. We also invite those Dow students that are educated in the Richardson Independent School District, so we try to include as many of our students as possible. We had over 500 entries this year. So I want to start by introducing these winners. First of all, we have the poster contest winners. We have the poster contest winners. We have the poster contest winners. Well, I'll go ahead and ask. Sandra Segovia from Segoville Elementary, is she here with us today? No? Good job, Sandra. Liam Walker with Hexter Elementary, grade 2. Third grade, Thomas Dennison with Hexter Elementary. They're out learning more things. Emily Gerardo from Stephen C. Foster Elementary. Emily is here. I met her this morning.
Congratulations, Emily.
Kalashri Singong from L.A. Simmons Elementary and Gina Ratatunukun, got that close, from L.A. Simmons Elementary as well, a fifth grader. Our 2010 poster contest, I'm sorry, t-shirt contest winners now. Oh, wait. The grand prize, I was so excited. Gina was our grand prize winner. Sorry, Gina. As you see there, what a great poster. These are fun. I've been doing this for a long time. Gina? Congratulations. I just am so excited. This is fun for me every year. It's just probably the most fun I have in my job. No, it is the most fun. The 2010 T-shirt contest winners, I want to introduce Mr. Allen, you want to display that again for us?
Put it on,
Nina Chavez from L.A. Simmons, a sixth grader. Michelle Mata, a seventh grader from W.H. Gaston Middle School. Arlene Carcamo from Gaston Middle School as well. And the grand prize winner from Harry Stowe Montessori Academy is Carol Garcia. And lastly, I want to introduce the junior and senior high school categories, which is the essay contest. Our third place was Bailey Boyce, a senior from Pegasus School of Liberal Arts and Sciences. Rocio Avila, our second place winner from the Trinidad Garza Early College High School at Mountain View College. For those that didn't know, we have one of those. Isn't that a cool thing out there? And the first place winner in our essay contest is a junior from same Garza Early College at Mountain View, Melissa De Leon. So I want to congratulate you all. Each of our winners will get a plaque, a gift bag, which we have prizes out, I think, outside for our winners and certificates associated with that. I want to recognize all the students, plus the teachers and parents. God bless the teachers and parents for being there for our kids. With that, congratulations.
Well, Jody, we're going to present to you this proclamation from the entire City Council on Drinking Water Week. Thanks for everything
you
do.
You bet.
Good. Why don't we get some pictures up here, guys? Why don't we move up to about here, and then we'll get pictures of everybody up here. Joe, you want to come join me?
Sure. Woo-hoo!
Hey,
water!
Chief, you want to drink with us?
If I may have the Samuel ROTC rifle team come in, please.
The Spartans. I'm going that way. Yes.
I believe they may be downstairs. Mr. Mayor, if they get here in the next few minutes, after we do the speakers, if we could recognize them then, because I'm fairly certain they're downstairs and on the way.
Why don't we do that? We'll just wait a couple minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Terrific. Let me give a quick overview of our agenda, and then we'll get into it. Of course, we'll go to our open microphone speakers in just a moment. There's a couple of voting agenda items. We'll go through those two briefings. We will go ahead and adjourn at 10:15, so we'll get as far into the agenda as we can. Then I think everyone's attending the memorial service for John Ware, and then we'll simply pick it up after that. We do have an executive session that I anticipate will probably run in the 20 to 30 minute range. So we're going to be a little bit flexible depending on what time we come back for that. So we'll just try to communicate with each one on start times. Again, it'll be completely dependent on what time we get back from the memorial service. With that, we'll go to speakers, and given the challenges on the agenda and the other events today, we'll do the speakers for a minute and 30 seconds.
Okay, minute and 30 seconds. First speaker is going to be Vernon Hoyle, followed by Roy Nuttall and Ray Nuttall. And before our first speaker comes forward, let me recite the rules for speaking. Citizens and other visitors attending city council meetings shall observe the same rules of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to members of the city council. Any person making personal, impertinent, profane, or slanderous remarks, or who becomes boisterous while addressing the city council, or while attending the city council meeting, shall be removed from the room as the sergeant at arm is so directed by the presiding officer. And the person shall be barred from further audience before the city council during that session of the city council. Each speaker will be allowed a minute and a half to speak. When the amber light blinks, when the amber numbers blink, you have 30 seconds to speak, and you will see a flashing of stop. So if you would come forward now, Mr. Vernon Hoyle, Roy Nuttall, Ray Nuttall, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you very much. The first item on the agenda is the minutes of April 21st meeting. It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Any opposed, so ordered. Madam Secretary, our boards and commissions, please.
Yes, sir. We, for board and commissions, we just have the appointment of chairs this morning. Kathy Hewitt for the Reinvestment Zone 16 Board, Davis Garden, being nominated by Councilmember Newman, and Randall White for the Reinvestment Zone 15 Board, the Fort Worth Avenue Board, being nominated by Mayor Leppard as chairs of both of those boards.
It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Any opposed, so ordered. Madam Secretary Dart.
Mr. Mayor, Dart is consideration appointment of members to the Dart Board for places 1 and 9, and Council Member Coop is going to handle the motion for the appointment.
Ms. Coop, please.
Thank you, Madam Secretary. I move approval of the resolution to reappoint Robert Strauss and Lafayette Fay, Moses Wilkins, to serve on the Dallas Area Rapid Transit Board of Directors, places 1 and 9, respectively, for a term to expire on June the 30th, 2012, as recommended by the City Council's Transportation and Environment Committee.
And those are the shared appointments, right?
One of them is a shared appointment, which is Fay Wilkins, and the other one is a full Dallas appointment, which is Robert Strauss.
Great.
And there also is one additional appointment that we have to make to round out our full complement of appointees, and I'm sure that will be coming to the Transportation Committee in the next several weeks or so.
Appreciate that. It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Any opposed, so ordered. Madam Secretary, item 4.
Item 4 is a resolution designating absences by Council Members Carolyn Davis and Sheffy Cadane as being for official city business.
Motion. Moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Any opposed, so ordered. Madam Secretary, item 5.
Item 5 is to authorize a public hearing to be held on May 26, 2010 to receive comments on the proposed use of a portion of Runyon Creek Greenbelt located at 1900 Camp Wisdom Road, totaling approximately 8,170 square feet of land for the installation of an 18-inch wastewater line to serve the University of North Texas System Dallas campus.
Ms. McGowan?
Yeah, I have a question on this. I don't know who can answer it, but my question is, when the city conveys land to Dallas Water Utilities, does Dallas Water Utilities pay for the land?
Yes.
Okay, because it doesn't mention that in here. It just says no cost consideration to the city, and it would seem that the city ought to be being paid. That's what I was wondering. Maybe it here. If you want me to make it bigger.
They would pay for it. I can't read. I need to read the agenda item, but I'll check again for you.
Okay. Well, it says that there's no cost consideration.
Okay, but my only guess is they probably grouped the entire city together when they said that, keeping in mind that there are allocations between one entity of the city, one entity of the city to another. We can get Gene. Mr. Atkins, do you want to go in and we'll try to address this?
It's no cost to the city.
I would think there should be income.
It's no cost.
Okay. I understand.
Right.
Okay.
And this is a line that's on UNT Council.
Oh, no. It's going
through the part.
That's
no cost to the city. Right.
I was just looking for the city to get money from DW. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, we definitely get money.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you. You know, you give a call, I will let you know. So moved. Thank you.
Okay.
Moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Any opposed, so ordered. The first item is the consolidated plan budget amendments. No amendments were submitted. Does anybody want to submit one from the floor?
All my concern was on, I think, was the reentry program that it was going towards the court we're taking out. Ms. Crenfield, I spoke to you, I think, last week about that. Could you just explain to me, is that money that's going to the court of high, is that?
Right, we reprioritized the funding away from the offender reentry program in the CDBG budget and utilized the funding for the addition of the two community courts in South Oak Cliff and West Dallas.
So what is the reentry money? Do we lose that? And that's my concern. Are we actually losing that? I know last week we said we're not losing the reentry money, but to me it looks like we are losing the $92,000.
We will need to look for another source of funds.
Well, I asked last time, I thought that you said that we was not losing that. And so that's why I did not submit that, as a question.
Did we have some leftover in that from this year that we've rolled forward? I'm trying to remember.
No, we don't. It's the staff person in the city attorney's office, so we don't have
leftover.
So therefore, amend to the floor, I would like to reinstate that money for the reentry because I'm passionate about it, and we need to have that resource there. I'm sorry, to come at a late moment to discuss that, but my understanding is that money will still be available for reentry.
You'll need to say where you want to take it from.
I assume you're going to take it from community courts.
No, I don't want to take it from community courts because we need our community courts. So
I think the challenge of what we're going to have is we've got a fixed number. So if we take out of one, it has to come from someplace else. In other words, we have to have a net zero.
Well, I know net zero.
Is that right?
Like I said, I'm sorry, that I thought it was there, but I have not been able to review and find out where do we need to take it from. And since we got a motion, do this have to
well,
be done?
Well, this is not voted on today.
It's not voted on today. So I want to make
on
sure.
The next it's on the agenda.
Preliminary adoption would be next Wednesday.
Okay, so we'll structure you an amendment you can give from the floor next week. We talk about how you want to do it.
And then kind of research and see where that comes from.
No problem. Thank you, Mayor.
Let me go to Mr. Newman, then Ms. Davis.
Mayor, a question for you. Is there a limit, and I don't know if this is for Gene or for Mayor, is there a limit for certain funds? I think I asked at the last briefing about after-school programs or in the meeting you and I had.
Mm-hmm.
And where does that limit show up here?
So,
is it a percentage limit? Is that what it is?
Yeah. Within the CDBG budget, there's a 15% cap on public service type programs.
Okay. So if I look at our briefing deal, if I look at the public service line, I'm flipping through here just a second. Is it?
If you look at the bottom of page 7.
The bottom of page 7, $3,032,000.
Exactly.
So that number is capped against the 22 or 23 total? Is that what you're saying?
It's against the allocation for the CDBG grant, the $19 million allocation.
Okay, wait a minute. I'm confused. You said it was capped against the total, which is the 30.
The CDBG only portion of the consolidated plan. Remember, there's four separate grants.
Okay. Oh, against the 22.8. Is that what you said?
Yeah, the 22.8 approximately.
So what you're saying, it's capped at what percentage?
15%.
And is that statutory? Is that administrative cap?
No, it's not ours.
The Fed's cap.
Right, absolutely.
Okay. And so if I was to, so it, and that's under the portion that's considered public. What do you call it? Public services? Public services.
If you wanted to increase an after-school program in that category, you would not only have to find the money and take it away from something else, you would have to reduce the money being spent within that category on something. So there would be two hits on
that,
two other things.
That sum within that category.
Right.
The 15%.
You get, yeah.
Okay. Next question. All right, let me stew on that. Next question. This is a straw vote today, I understand, and there's an adoption vote, correct, subsequently?
There's a preliminary adoption on next week's agenda.
Okay. And walk me forward as to the council's role, the Community Development Commission's role, as far as once we create this framework, because that's what this is. Does the Community Development Commission, are they involved in interviewing potential providers that fit into this
The descriptions of the programs are put out as a request for proposal.
Based on this allocation that we
have. Based on this allocation, and then people bid and say they want to do this particular piece of work.
Okay. So is this reference to, what we're potentially approving is not reference to a specific vendor or provider today?
No. Now, very frequently, what happens is the vendors, the providers, the community people bring the ideas to the CDC and say, this is what we'd like to do and we'd like for you to spend some money on it. The vendor that brought the idea might eventually get the money, but it's also possible that another vendor would get the money.
And the qualification for those vendors, those providers, is that through the bid process? Tell me I'm trying to think a little bit forward.
Okay, the qualifications for the vendor to get the money are going through a proposal process or a bid process. Yes.
And is that proposal a low-cost provider, or is that a qualitative, a quantitative process?
Some of them are proposals, some of them are bids. So proposals, you have a little bit more judgment.
Qualitative.
Yes.
And then that is recommended by the manager?
Yes.
And then the council approves?
And there's a contract on the council agenda.
Okay, I understand that. Okay. All right. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you so much, Mayor. Let's go to page 15. This is item 61. For the mortgage assistance program, there's $1,875,000. Is there any money left over? This is on page 11. It's CDBG page 15. Of that $1,875,000, do we have any money left over? Because I know we're not proposing to add anything to the new budget on the mortgage assistance program. How much money is left over?
I'm sorry, which line?
Line 61,
okay.
Page 15.
It's not funded in the home budget for next year, but it is funded in the CDBG budget.
Okay, how much money do we have available?
Let me find that line item. Oh, if you look at line 28, $3 million.
Okay, so we have $3 million it's not going to be funded. Is it funded?
It's funded within the CDBG budget. If there's overlap, you can qualify those expenses under CDBG or home.
What's the overlap? What's the previous money that has carried forward? How much is that?
How much money do we have? Whatever.
What's the previous dollars that's been carried forward from the previous year, from 2008, 2009, is carried forward? How much money has been carried forward?
Councilmember Davis, we have approximately $3.7 million that's carrying forward.
Okay. And from what year?
From 08-09.
Okay. From 2008 to 2009?
08-09, 09-10.
Okay. And of that 2008 to 2009, from 08 to 09, how much was that?
In 08-09, we had $4 million. This year, we have 3.7. So far, of unspent money from this year going forward, we have about $3 million that's unspent, and then we're recommending $3 million for next year.
Okay. That's thank you so much.
Thank you. Okay, so then kind of in summary, Ms. Margo, and then I'll go back to you, Mr. Reno.
Thank you, Mayor. I have a couple of general questions about the consolidated budget, and this, I guess, is as good a time to ask them as any. Okay, obviously we carry forward a lot of groups from year to year. So my question is, do these groups actually come back and reapply every year, or is there an automatic carryover that once a group has received money, they automatically continue to receive money?
They don't automatically receive money.
Do they come in and reapply and represent to the
term of their contract ends, don't they?
Yes. Their contract has
term. When their contract term is over, they have to reapply.
And what's the normal term of a contract?
It varies.
I mean,
it could be 2 or 3 years, but they have to get funded every year.
Okay.
So there's you don't automatically sign up for 5 years worth of money. It may take you 5 years to spend the money you get 1 year, but you don't automatically extend through budgets.
Got it. Do we have evaluation criteria? I mean, do we look at, for example, if we have after-school programs, do we say, okay, we want to see that you're teaching kids to be ready for school or do their homework?
The programs have evaluations in them, and we have staff that goes out, and the auditor staff, and evaluates the program and the production of the program.
Okay. I would like offline to talk to someone about that. I just want to understand
what
that process is.
Sure.
Because it seems to me that we're almost like a small, maybe not so small foundation. We receive grant proposals. We're making grants year after year. And, in the foundation world, there are a lot of expectations when you give money about the quality of the product that you're supporting. And also, often trying to help them find other sources of funding so that they don't become totally dependent on you. And I was just trying to see how we...
We can talk through that. I think you'll find that analogy you made is very good. I think we look at performance. We look at, if you've got a good service, we look at encouraging you to expand it through other ways. That's a good analogy you give, but I do think there are analysis and controls there.
Okay.
Associated with the service.
All right. Well, I would like to find out more about that.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Newman? I'm sorry for the. I highlighted this and missed the bottom portion. Gene, on page 3, the reference to number 2, Outreach After School Summer Programs, this is kind of a follow up to my previous question. It references 26 CDBG funded sites.
Yes.
Okay. Are we approving 26 sites today? What determines those 26 funded sites?
Those are determined by the Park Department. They work with DISD to determine those sites.
So they're determined by the Park Department. So if I want some of the rec centers in my respective district considered, do I go to Paul Dyer in the Park Department? What's the process for that?
Yeah.
Yes, Paul.
Okay, I'll be headed to Mr. Dyer. Thank you.
They have to meet the qualifications.
Of course. Gotcha. If they meet the qualification, I want them considered. Thank you very much.
Commissioner Tinsky and Ms. Cooper.
Thanks, Mayor. Gene, I just want to reemphasize a conversation that you and I had a couple of weeks ago with regards to when we ask for reports from these various agencies as to how the money is being spent, and I'm saying this very, very broad brush because I'm not accusing anybody of doing anything improper or whatever, but it seems to me, based on the instances that you and I talk about, that in some of these cases, appropriate levels of records are not being kept, and what's happening is that you've got a certain amount of funding and it's backing in based on the number of people that they believe they served as to what it costs to serve each person, rather than really what the cost is to serve those people. So it seems to me that we need some better detailed records from these agencies to enable us to evaluate really what does it cost to provide a certain piece of service to a certain citizen.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Mayor.
Thank you, Mayor. Just a point on the after-school programs, because some of them are at the rec centers and then some of them are at school sites, and that the Park Department evaluates them and kind of knows what the curriculum is and the program is. I think it's a really good thing. Occasionally, there'll be the community development money will be a smaller amount, and they'll have to reduce the number of sites. They try to pick it up with their foundation program money, which is Send a Kid to Camp. And to that point, I just wanted to put in for all the council members here that if you're not familiar with that program, it would really be helpful that you promote that program to your constituents, because it's an opportunity for you, for your constituents, to donate to Send a Kid to Camp. And they do end up providing those summer programs that are not able to be picked up by the park department in any one summer. So just to let you know that, Mayor, that there is an opportunity if you want perhaps to have a program, summer program at a particular site, there's an opportunity to have donations directed towards that foundation, and then that can be returned maybe for that particular site. Thank you.
And hope is we'll use that more aggressively too. Ms. Davis?
Thank you, ma'am. I want to send it back to page 3 and have sat on the CDBG commission for about 5 years back in the day. HUD ensure, they make sure that each one of those organizations that receives funds from the city of Dallas is required to do a lot of paperwork. Am I right, Jean?
Yes, it's very paperwork intensive.
They, and if they don't turn in the right paperwork, they don't get funded. So, and then not only that, the auditor re-audits these organizations. So to say that the paperwork is funny, I would have to say that is not true. Each organization that receives funding from outreach, after school, summer program, job care, city child care, arts education, they have to meet HUD requirement. They have to make sure the paperwork is done right. They have to make sure the audit work is done right, because our own auditor audits these organizations. He does not just look at what we give them. He looks at all the paperwork. Am I right?
Yes.
So I just want to make sure these organizations that's a part of the city and that's doing after school, summer school, child care, all these groups, and not only that, CDBG, that department, Jean, mm-hmm. that you're over, you make sure that your staff works with these groups, and then you make sure, and this is from my own experience, make sure that every detail of paperwork is done. Am I right?
Yes, we do work very hard to ensure the compliance with all of the federal regulations.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. So then in anticipation, we'll have one amendment from the floor next week from Mr. Atkins. Mr. Atkins, correct, right?
Yes, correct.
Okay. Any other amendments we anticipate then? Okay.
Get an update on the pools. Some pools are going to be closed this summer for remodeling. Can we get a list of those
sure.
pools
that's
going to
easy.
Be closed?
Yeah. Jean, could you handle
yes,
that?
Certainly, we'll provide that for you.
Perfect. Okay, so we anticipate at least the one amendment, and that'll be $92,000 for the reentry, and then you'll try to identify where the options are. Okay, with that, Ms. Hill, can I turn it over to you then for one presentation?
Mr. Mayor and Council, thank you so very much for your indulgence. We have brought this morning a very fine group of young people from Samuel High School in Pleasant Grove. I'm going to ask the ROTC rifle drill team to come up, please, along with the assistant instructor, Mr. Dewey Giles. And as they're coming up, I do want to recognize the presence of Mr. Hector Flores, who is Director of Intergovernmental Relationships with the Dallas Independent School District. No, don't go out. Don't go out. Tell them to stay in here. Stay in here. The ROTC Rifle Drill Team of Stanmore High School. Mr. Giles, if you will come up. There is a portion of the Christian scriptures, Mr. Allen, where Jesus was calling the disciples. He found Philip, who lived in Bethsaida, the same city as Peter and his brother Andrew. And after Jesus called him, Philip went and found Nathanael. And Nathanael said, Philip said to Nathanael, we found the Messiah. Nathanael said, can anything good come out of Nazareth? Philip said to Nathanael, come and see.
Not long ago, Samuel High School was on the brink of closing. Samuel was almost gone. With strong leadership and young people like these you've seen this morning, some folks said, can anything good come out of Samuel? I say to you this morning, come and see. Samuel High School, the drill team, we specially recognize you, Mr. Giles, and these young people, Enrique Acosta, Ethan Chavez, Willie Ellis, Jorge Hernandez, Lawrence Lockett, Devon Martinez, Savon McKinley, Jesus Mendez, Nigel Pryor, Christina Rivera, Crystal Rivera, Victor Tomei, Noel Villanueva, and Joseph Woods. Can anything good come out of Samuel, which was almost gone? I say to you today, come and see. Congratulations, and thank you.
Thanks for having us today. I'm First on Giles. I've been at Samuel since 1996. I've been there since the hard times and the easy times. We're back up on top at this point right here. These young people that you see right here, they're with me most of the time from 7:30 in the morning to about 5:30, 6 o'clock in the afternoon. They put in a lot of time. We're a little tight in here space-wise. I know they went a lot slower than they normally do, and we'll talk about that later. But the ROTC program, our mission is to motivate young people to be better citizens. That's it. For all those people think my job is to put people in the Army, that's not it. If they come out, go to college, and do the right things, we're in the right block. We're doing good. And so far, we've been doing real good. And I thank you for giving us the time.
Just real quick, I just want to say to you young men and that special young lady, that was presentation was absolutely on mark. And what I see in front of me today is I see some young men, a special young lady that, you know, the future is y'all's. And I'm so proud of you. I already know that you're going to be a success because you're taking your time to do this. And thank you for your leadership, your guidance and such. Wish we could fast forward and see what all of y'all are going to do here in the next 10 or 15 years. I know it's going to be good. So all I can say, I normally say, how about them Wildcats? I'm going to say, how about them Spartans?
How about them Spartans?
Thank you very much.
Mr. Mayor, I know we're pressed for time. I recognize that, but these young people will not have another opportunity to be with this city council, so I'm going to ask anyone from the council who wants to do so to come up and take a picture with these young people. Y'all, come on. We're going to take pictures with y'all. And again, Mayor and Council, thank you so much for having these young people, even though we're late.
We've got a couple of minutes. I'm going to try to get through the next briefing. What I'm going to ask is, the material's been distributed, so we won't go through the material. Mr. Zlavikowski, I'm going to ask you to take any questions. Maybe you want to do a one-minute summary, and then I'm going to turn it to Mr. Natinsky if he'd give a one-minute summary. I will tell you, I think this has got enormous potential. It has been well-received. There's been an incredible amount of hard work that's been received. It's innovative. It's creative. It pushes investment in the key areas of our city that we need it. It leverages off of opportunities at the federal level. I think this is kind of a win-win-win type of thing, and I think it's just important that you communicate that. So, Carl, could you just do a quick summary with it, and then maybe you could close this, Mr. Kinski?
Thank you, Mayor. I just want to stress a couple of things. Basically, the CDRC is a joint venture with the U.S. Customs and Immigration Service. The city is the owner, and we actively promote it. We have hired an independent fund manager to basically underwrite the investments and recruit the investors. What I did want to emphasize to you is that the city does not guarantee investments. It doesn't make investment decisions. We don't set investment priorities or participate in the underwriting process, and we've carefully structured this to avoid liability to the city. Civitas is not compensated by the city. They make their fees from transaction fees and management fees, and the city does receive a transaction, an administrative fee for each transaction. Just to give you a quick breakdown of current status, we've currently got seven projects in underwriting that total about $75 million. We've got 14 more projects that are in an active pipeline. We are in a position right now where we're doing mostly education to the business and finance and development community so people understand how this program works. It doesn't work by itself, but it works extremely well in combination with traditional financing sources and also with public funding sources like our public-private partnership program and the new market tax credit program. We anticipate that the initial deals are going to close in the first quarter of the next calendar year. Just want to mention to you that some projects work better than others. There's a real job generation requirement, so residential, for example, doesn't work very well, and construction jobs don't count. Our goal for this fiscal year is to raise about $50 million. My expectation is it will exceed this, but we haven't closed our first deal yet. And we expect to be closing about $150 million a year thereafter. What I will also tell you is that we're going to put our money where our mouth is. I have promised Mary that we'll pull in about $600,000 in administrative fees to offset general fund costs for the Economic Development Department. So that pretty much concludes my presentation, and take all questions.
Yeah. Carl, thanks for everything. Ron, do you want to add anything now?
Just a couple comments, Mr. Mayor. You know, Carl kind of closed on the fact that, not only does it not cost the city anything, but the administrative part of the cost that the city is bearing is being recouped through the program. So at the end of the day, it really doesn't cost the city anything. This is really a win-win deal for us. There has been some ramp-up time and a lot of hard work to get the program going, and that's to be expected with any new program. There's a lot of dollars involved. We're looking at quality investments to put the money into, things that will help build our tax base in the city and for a long term. So we want to make sure that the deals are indeed good deals. I think we're in this for the long term on it. This is not something that, you know, we'll bring in $50 million next year, or we'll bring in 75 and then you lose track of it. So I think we sort of have to be looking at this 3, 4, 5 years out the road. Once we get it rolling, I think it's going to be a lot easier as we move along, because we will have proof of concept projects on the ground that have been built utilizing the CDRC, you know, programs, and that message will go back all over the world to other wealthy investors that they can invest in Dallas and see a good return on their money. One of the things I'd like to close on is when they come over and visit us, many of us hear from our constituents and people in Dallas about, well, gee, what's Dallas got going for it? I will tell you that no matter where they come from in the world, whether it's Shanghai with all kinds of fancy buildings, or Hong Kong or Europe or wherever, the people that are coming over here to see what Dallas has to offer with this program are really, really amazed and excited about what we have on the ground here. So we ought to be really proud of what we've been doing in the city, and get that message back to your constituents. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. I know there's a number of questions that we'll have. We'll have to take those when we come back from the session. We'll go ahead now, go into recess, and again, We'll try to get back in session promptly from when we return, but we'll just kind of let and see what time that is. So we'll be in recess then. Thank you. And then vans to the memorial service will be down on L1 just as soon as you can get down there.
Alright, as soon as Ms. Davis comes, we're going to get started, and when we do get started, I will be calling on Ms. Margolin first, so that you can ask your question, and then I'll go to Ms. Coop, and then anyone else can line up. Oh, where is the mayor?
Keep going, you're doing good. Keep going.
No, I yield.
You're first, go ahead, Ms. Margolin.
This is on the regional center. A question that I've had, and it's probably been explained to me before, but I'll try to get it this time, is what is actually the difference between what we're doing here with the regional center and what somebody else could do using just the regular EB-5? How is this different?
In short, do you want to take that question? The visa they get is an EB-5 visa, and the rules and regulations, if an individual applies for an EB-5 visa, are rather straightforward, no flexibility and so forth. And for one individual to deal with getting that whole visa process through is really a laborious process. Under the regional center, there's a lot of flexibility. For example, on the straight EB-5, they have to invest $1 million, period. Under the regional center, depending where it is, it's either $1 million or $500,000. The employees are counted different ways under the regional center. The availability of things that they can invest in the regional center is a very wide, broad range of types of investments. On an individual basis, it's really just one piece, one business.
So it's packaged different, and the approval process as a result is different. So instead of individual approvals, once we go through the first one, we've got an approval that can be a model going forward. And so it helps it.
So is the individual investor is still investing in one business? They're not investing in a fund. Is that correct?
At the end of the day, the investors are matched up
to an specific investment.
Yes,
correct.
Okay. Because you have to show the jobs and that to be able to go back to the EB-5.
Okay. But you're saying that the requirements are slightly different, or we've worked something else out with the federal government that varies somewhat other than what the requirements would be under a typical EB-5?
Under a straight EB-5 visa.
A straight EB-5 visa for just an individual means that the individual has to come in and do their own business. And do their own reporting, and their business has to meet the same 10-job requirement. This is a situation where you aggregate the investments and put them into a separate project or business, and the aggregate number of jobs still has to match.
So they don't have to have the hands-on responsibility that they might have under the other situation?
That's right. Okay. They don't have to have any responsibility whatsoever.
Okay. That helps a lot. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. Now, under this call, when you said they don't have to have any other responsibility, they're just investors only?
That's correct.
Okay. And so they would they know what they're investing in?
Yes, they have the opportunity to know what they're investing in, because when their application goes into the USCIS, the Customs and Immigration Service, it is attached to a specific investment. So there's a program offering provided, and that investor has the opportunity to look at that if they so desire. Some of them do, some of them don't.
Okay.
But they are investing in a project attached to it.
Yes, they are. It's very specific, and that's the and so if you had 10 different investors that were involved in one project, they would all be screened individually by the Immigration Service, but they would be attached to the same project.
Okay. That's a part of my district where it has eight different investors, and I'm not going to say the name of the business. I don't want to put it out there. It has eight different investors. Now, the community from time to time might have some concerns, and, you know, they'll pass you from the next person to the next person to the next person. How will we deal with that if the community or the neighborhood have concerns about that particular business?
Well, I'll try to answer the question. These individual investors would be invested through Civitas,
okay,
who is our, our fund manager, and so they would just be a limited partner,
okay,
in the deal. So
okay,
the community wouldn't really have any relationship with just
that,
like with a bank or another financial,
okay,
institution.
So it would have its own management and still go through the same process with a manager, vice.
Absolutely, it's just another financing vehicle in terms of any projects in the different communities.
Okay, on page six, is this some examples that you're giving, $75 million in underwriting? This is something we've already done. I didn't follow that on page six.
That's the pipeline. There are seven projects that are actually gone into underwriting. Underwriting simply means that the project itself is being evaluated.
Under this project that we're talking about.
It's being evaluated. There's another 14 of those where there's an active prospect, so somebody has expressed a desire and an interest to be involved in the program.
Okay.
So the first stage would be it's closed. We haven't had any closed. There's seven where they're evaluating the project, so hopefully they will get to the point of making that investment where it would close.
Okay.
And then there's another 14 where there's a strong interest.
Okay, this is the only thing I'm asking, Mayor. On the page six, we're looking at deals include hotels, corporate relocation, health care, seniors, nursing homes in the southern Dallas, store call centers, and entertainment companies. How do we package this where we can see that community has been taken? Just not just a spot here, a spot there, a spot. Can we look at an area where we bring these investors in and they rehabilitate or change a whole, so two streets, one street?
What we're doing is giving, and some projects that would fall into the category that you were talking about would actually be part of this.
Mm-hmm.
But we've also shown a wider range because, again, it's not the city that's selecting them. It's the individual investor.
Okay.
So what the goal is to give as wide a range as possible to encourage as many investors to get involved, and they will select the type of project. So, for instance, if there's an investor that all of a sudden feels more comfortable with a hotel, then they'll go down the road of a hotel.
Would we have a location or a land already there?
These would all be specific projects. And I think the key is, for the most part, think of them as limited partners. So they're not an active partner or an active management, a general partner. And think of it, if the project would have to go through all of the approvals. So let's take a hotel project for a second. If it's a hotel project they're investing in, it would still have to go through all of the zoning, all of getting its building permits, all of the sort of things that you'd have to do any other project.
Okay. But if the community came back and said, we don't want a hotel there, if it's close to a neighborhood, then would it still go through that same process?
Well, it would have to go, it would go through the zoning process.
Okay, but
it would literally have to go through the zoning process. So take the investor out of the game.
I have.
It's just the project.
Okay.
So that project would have to go through the normal approval process of any hotel and in any part of the city.
But it's not guaranteed that hotel will be there, even if it goes through the right process.
That's correct. Now, I will tell you on all of the ones, and correct me if I'm wrong, all of these, they already have gotten the necessary approval processes.
Yes, I mean, the investors would be...
Yeah, that's what I think. So all of these would have those approval processes already in line. And, in fact, the project has probably already been proposed, is already down there, and they're just going out and trying to get investors, get financing for it. And this just becomes an element of the financing.
Okay. And what focus area are we looking at further? Is there any focus area?
Well, the focus area is the entire city of Dallas. Now, there is a targeted employment area that you could see there in Appendix A, and it is the areas where there is a higher unemployment than the average national unemployment, and the minimum investor requirement there is $500,000.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look farther up north above 635, the minimum investor requirement is $1 million.
Okay.
Now, one thing I just wanted to clarify relative to your previous question is that we as a city, don't have anything to do with the project selection process or the project underwriting process. We're not involved in any of that. Now, what we can do and have the option to do, if we are wanting to encourage some projects, let's say in the southern part of the city, we're able to use our public-private partnership program. We're able to use new market tax credits or Section 108, various tools, and all of those approvals will come through the council and come through the normal process. So we can co-invest in a project that is independently selected, but we don't get involved in the underwriting process of the regional center, and we structured ourselves that way purposely to avoid liability.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Thank you. Ms. Coop, please.
Carl, I just want to kind of just put a seed in your thoughts for just a second. I talked to AC about this the other day. Actual manufacturing jobs have gone away, if indeed we really had a big manufacturing base here in town, which we really have never had. We've been, you know, the history of financial cotton and the financial industry.
Yes.
We're a big oil industry, not really heavy into light manufacturing. And in the next transportation bill, it's going to be heavily leaning towards more transit. And because of the Buy America clause, where I can't remember the exact percentages, but I think it's like 80% or something has to be manufactured in the United States, even though you can buy trains and whatever else that you might need for rapid transit from a foreign company. It seems to me like it might be a good idea, because of this program, to begin to look at some of the component parts, especially electronics, which are very lightweight, easily manufactured here in the Dallas area, to be shipped not just within the Dallas area, because that's not, economies of scale wouldn't work, but to be shipped all over the United States. And I think that's a growth industry, just as we saw the R&D for healthcare, UT Southwestern and North Carolina, take place, you know, 10 years ago, you know, and still is taking place now, but where they saw that out into the horizon. I think maybe this is a growth opportunity for skilled labor in the southern Dallas area to be combined with the University of North Texas, which is moving towards a emphasis in logistics. And it might be a really good fit to have a university sort of do perhaps a business model or do some research for us to see where we might fit into light manufacturing. I know the mayor and I've had a conversation a year or two ago with a manufacturing company that did some of the nuts and bolts and steel work for the chassis on trains and all sorts of, and even trains that you would move, that would move freight within the United States. But I think maybe it's a growth opportunity, and I'd like to see us sort of see if that couldn't give some thought to that.
I agree with you, Ms. Coop. I think that's an excellent idea, and we actually have had some conversations related to that, and you know that we do have, we did have a sort of an enlarged foreign trade zone down in the inland port area that would complement that very well, and you also have the UNT campus there. So I think there are excellent opportunities.
Well, I know other areas of the country are beginning to look at this, and they're looking more towards, you know, how can I manufacture or assemble the actual trains or high-speed rail or whatever, streetcars, whatever they might be utilizing, whatever transit mode they might be utilizing. This is slightly a different deal than that,
yep,
because it's really the component parts that go into it, whether it be the seats and, you know, and the electronics and the switching. And we do really well at electronics and things that require, you know, computer
yep,
chips and so on and so forth,
yep,
for the switches. So, to the extent that we can start to kind of think outside the box on that, I think it'd be a great idea. When you don't manufacture anything in your city, it's hard to give our young people, who we are, of course, are wanting them to get as much education as they can, but there are also opportunities to become skilled laborers, and just out of high school. And so, you know, with the appropriate training. So, bring me back something at some point, kind of a thought on
we'll
that.
We'll do that.
Okay?
We'll follow up with you.
Okay. This might be a good program for
that. We've
been
in the same line of thought and excellent
okay,
idea.
Okay. Thank you.
Appreciate your comment. Mr. Jackson, please.
Carl, a couple questions. On the visa, how many visas do the United States offer in this program? You know, we, you know, at the United States level, you know, we talk about it on the first page that there are 10,000 visa annuals for foreign nationals. That in this program, there is a limit, right?
Well, there is a limit for the EB-5 program of 10,000 visas per year. 3,000 of those 10,000 have to be used in the regional center program, and if those are used up, there are still 7,000 other visas that the regional center program may also utilize if they qualify.
Of those 3,000, I know there were some legislators that owned the book that they were trying to stop the EB-5, I know, could you kind of brief talk about that? Is that going forward now? Is it still up and open or what?
Well, the program got a three-year extension a couple of months back. There has really never been a lot of controversy about the EB-5 program. There's been a tremendous amount of discussion, as you're well aware, about the subject of immigration, and from time to time the program has been held captive, but it's never been not been renewed.
Okay. Well, I'd also say that the conceptual framework that was put out in the last couple of days actually was much more aggressive in terms of skill, the highly skilled individuals and those sorts of things. So it was actually being much more aggressive in inviting visas to be offered for those individuals.
Okay. Okay. On page 8, is this official map of the boundaries, or this is unofficial right now? We look at it on page 8.
Official in what sense, Mr. Atkins?
These would be the area that the EB-5 would be part of.
The total boundaries are the city boundaries of the city of Dallas. The areas in green are the areas where are the so-called targeted employment areas, and the areas where the minimum investment per investor is $500,000. The areas in light gray would require a minimum $1 million investment.
Okay, so is this official, the area that we are referring to in EB-5?
That's correct.
Okay, but this can be changed, right? Do the mayor have authority to designate different areas to expand the areas?
Well, we have to. I mean, here's the answer to your question. The simple answer to your question is yes, but you have to follow a consistent methodology, and we had an outside consultant who has been involved in this nationally help us with the methodology, and then make the recommendations to the mayor. But the mayor has the ability, as designated by the governor, to designate the TEA. Yes.
Okay. So suppose we got an area that says is not part of it, and we need to designate it. What is the procedure and a process that we need to bring it to you, you bring it to the mayor? How do it work?
Well, the way
because we look at in my district, there's a whole lot of areas vacant, which is not population there, you know, and EB-5 might not go there because of the population there. So that would be in a gray area, you know, which it might be, you know.
Well, a couple of things. If there is a project that has merit, the Civitas folks could make a recommendation and say, you know, here is the justification, here is the recommendation. The mayor could make the designation. It would still have to go up to the Immigration Service to approve that.
So could you just give me a step and procedure and get all the council to procedure how we do it? You know, I want to be sure that, you know, go ahead.
Let me see if I can get some help here on this. I'd like to introduce you to Dan Healy, who is the managing director of Civitas.
You want to come up?
And Dan, do you have maybe you can help with the answer of that question.
Afternoon, everyone. Councilman, I understood your question to be, if there was an area that's currently not designated as a TEA, what would be the process to designate it if we wanted to do so?
That's correct.
The process would be, if we had a particular project that was located in one of those gray areas that's not currently designated, what we would do is my firm would engage a consultant, the same consultant.
Is that a cost to the city?
No, it's a cost to me.
Okay. just curious, you want a budget, you know.
It's always good, yeah. Check that box, okay. Absolutely. We would engage a consultant, and actually it would be, it would actually not be a cost directly to us. It would be a cost probably to the project sponsor.
Okay.
Okay. It would be a cost we would pass through. That would perform a study of specifically that area for that particular transaction, which we would then submit to the Immigration Service, the federal government, and then they would adjudicate it. So what we've done here is we've basically tried to take in as much of the city as we possibly could in one fell swoop, but if we had a particular project that was located in a gray area, that's how we would go about it.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mayor.
Just real quick, I've asked this question before, and I didn't see it in here. What's the minority participation in this contract?
What is the minority participation in our contract with Civitas?
Yeah, you know, percentage-wise ownership, what's the minority participation?
I can get back to you with the specific numbers of folks in Civitas that that meet a...
I want owners, not just employees, owners.
All right, I'll be glad to get back to you with that.
By next Wednesday, please.
Yes, there was not a requirement at the time of the contract, I might add.
Well, but didn't we talk about that when we did the contract, that we wanted minority participation?
I mean, yes, and there is, but there was no specific percentage required.
Well, but the city does have a standard practice of requiring minority participation, good faith efforts, is that right?
Well, I think there are guidelines, and it varies with from contract to contract.
Okay. This contract
went through a competitive bidding process, but I'll be very happy to provide you with that information.
Well, even competitive bidding, I mean, we require some good faith efforts, right?
I understand that. Yes, that's correct.
So. Would Civitas be willing to sign an addendum to the contract to say that they will meet the good faith effort goals of the city, and you work out a formula on what you think those goals should be regarding the market and investing and all that kind of
stuff? Mr. Salazar, why don't I get back to you with the minority ownership participation and get back to you on that point by next week.
Thank you, Carl. Appreciate it very much. It is now 2:18 on March 5th, 2010. The City Council will now go into a closed session under Section 551.071 of the Texas Open Meetings Act.
to receive advice from and consult with the city attorney on the following matters that are described on today's agenda: Allstate Insurance, Shiroda Daniels, versus Dallas, White versus Dallas, and legal issues involving the city auditor's audit of revenues from emergency ambulance fees in the fiscal year 2009 audit. I anticipate that will probably be about 20 minutes, and we'll be back for afternoon speakers.